And I'm Elizabeth Harrison in Providence. Congressman David Cicilline and Jim Langevin are lashing out at House Republicans for tying a spending plan to the delay of Obamacare. The plan is considered dead on arrival in the Senate, paving the way for a partial government shutdown at midnight tonight. Cicilline calls the strategy irresponsible.
This is not a way to do business. I mean, shutting down the government has real consequences. It means hundreds of thousands of federal employees will be furloughed. It means the SBA will not be in a position to issue small business loans. It means all of the facilities in our national parks will be closed. It means many government agencies that are responsible for research into important cures for diseases will stop. And I mean, the consequences of a government shutdown are significant.
U.S. Senators Jack Reed and Sheldon Whitehouse say 7,000 Rhode Islanders who work for the federal government could be furloughed in the event of a shutdown. In addition, new applications for veterans benefits and Social Security will be delayed. The director of Rhode Island's Health Insurance Exchange says the state is all ready for tomorrow's rollout of HealthSource RI, the Rhode Island version of Obamacare. As Rhode Island Public Radio's Flo Jonick tells us, officials running the online exchange expect business to be relatively slow for at least the first month.
HealthSource RI Director Christy Ferguson says Rhode Island is one of only a handful of states in the country ready to enroll people in Obamacare. Starting tomorrow, the HealthSource call center and online marketplace will be able to enroll people in health insurance policies, take premiums, and answer questions.
On the first day, I expect we'll get a little bit of a bump of calls, but still, most people in Rhode Island don't even know that this is happening. And so the advertising campaign will start on October 1st. We are out aggressively now all over the state talking about it. So it'll take a little bit of time, but I expect probably November and December will be heavy months.
People may be surprised to learn how little premiums will cost under the exchange. A 21-year-old man, for example, can get a low-end plan for as little as $150 a month. For a 64-year-old, the price rises to $450. Many people will be eligible for tax credits based on their income. Flo Jonick, Rhode Island Public Radio.
Meanwhile, the Better Business Bureau says scam artists are trying to take advantage of confusion surrounding Obamacare. According to the BBB, consumers across the country are reporting phone calls that claim to be from the government about new health insurance cards. The caller tells you you've been selected as part of a select group of Americans to receive insurance cards, but before the caller can mail it, he'll need your bank account and Social Security numbers. The Better Business Bureau urges customers to hang up on these people, ignore their pitches, and always guard your personal information. And work begins today on replacement of the Central Bridge in Barrington. The bridge, which is known affectionately as the White Church Bridge, spans the Barrington River. A $15 million contract has been awarded to the Cardi Corporation to remove the existing bridge, install a new bridge, and conduct stormwater mitigation work. Project completion is scheduled for May 2017. There will be intermittent lane closures on the bridge during daytime hours. More extensive closures will be done on an as-needed basis during the overnight hours. 2 weeks ago today, a shooter opened fire at the Washington Navy Yard. It turns out the suspected shooter, Aaron Alexis, was in Newport last month, where Newport police were called to his hotel room, and he reported hearing voices. The encounter, combined with others, has spurred debate about whether authorities should have seen red flags and done more. Lieutenant Colonel Michael Winquest is Deputy Supervisor for Field Operations with the Rhode Island State Police. He trains state troopers on how to handle people with mental illness, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Police are not clinicians, so what skills do they have when they come across someone who seems unstable?
We receive some training to recognize certain mental disorders that need attention. So it can be anywhere from major depression to schizophrenia to somebody that's in distress as a result of some mental illness.
In the case of Aaron Alexis, after Newport police had their exchange with him, they actually tried to notify Navy police, and it's not clear what kind of follow-up happened there. So how much does it complicate the situation when you have all these different layers of law enforcement? You have hospital staff, Newport police, Navy police in this case?
Right. Obviously, there's a lot of people involved in a situation like this. The officer at the scene, really, his job is to maintain the safety and get that person into a facility where they can be properly diagnosed. after that point, really, the law enforcement officer, all he can do is bring the facts to the attention of the emergency room physicians. And really, it's in the hands of medical professionals at that point.
But it seems like that didn't happen in this case.
I'm not aware of what happened. Once the person was brought to the attention of medical professionals. But obviously, I have to respect their opinion. I'm not sure what facts were presented to them and their interaction with Mr. Alexis. I'm not sure how that went. So obviously, not having the facts, I really can't comment on what happened.
So State Police Lieutenant Colonel Michael Winquist, take me to the street level. What are officers seeing right now? And what do they use when they're trying to assess that situation?
Well, we see a wide range of things dealing with the public. One in every 10 persons suffers from some type of mental illness. Obviously, there's varying degrees of that mental illness. So we may be called to a person that's disrobing in public, or we might go to a call where a person's standing in the middle of traffic. So it ranges all over the place. But when we get to that situation, the best thing to do is to speak to the person, listen to what they have to say. And again, we don't want to cause a spectacle to isolate that person, because crowds of people can actually infuriate the situation.
So the officer can have an exchange with the person, try to talk to them, maybe try to calm them down a little bit. What else?
Well, you have to be sympathetic. If somebody's hearing voices, you don't want to tell them that they're crazy. Obviously, you want to tell them that you want to be sympathetic. You want to ask them what the voices are telling him to do. You want to basically talk the person into custody, versus putting your hands on a person like that can actually trigger a response. A natural response is that you're the person that's causing them the problem. So they're very introverted. They're very paranoid of law enforcement in general in that situation. So we have to keep that in mind when we approach people like that.
Now, Michael Winquist, you mentioned that 1 in 10 people have some form of mental illness. But how common is this sort of thing, really? I mean, how often do officers actually come in contact with somebody who says, I'm hearing voices? You know, something that goes beyond just a depressive kind of person.
It depends on the area that you work in. Obviously, in a downtown situation, a lot of these people are homeless because of their mental illness. So you might encounter more people in the downtown area. If you're in a more rural area, you're not going to probably see it as much unless you get called to a residence, and that happens quite often too. But depending on what area you work, it could be it's a very frequent occurrence. But again, some of the levels of psychosis, I should say, or some of the levels of mental health illness are far less and don't require immediate intervention. Often we'll refer that person to a mental health facility that's in their area.
And in the training that state police get, what kind of tools do you give them to try to help them determine when you're dealing with a person who could become violent?
Well, first, what we do is they're taught about the three major mental health conditions that we may encounter. One's major depression, one's schizophrenia. When you talk about hearing voices, that happens quite often. I can't recall the third offhand, but there's three major situations that we may encounter in our travels. So,
but how does the officer know? I mean, how can the officer tell whether you're dealing with somebody who is just a little bit crazy or somebody who really has a propensity to become quite violent and could be a danger to others in the area?
Somebody that's hearing voices, we talked about that. If they're telling them to do harm to themselves or somebody else, I mean, that's a clear indicator. Someone that is extremely paranoid when we approach them. Some people are naturally fearful of law enforcement. I'm talking at extreme level. And sometimes there's physical indicators as well, rapid heart rate, they're sweating. If they're in a condition of hysteria, so to speak, if they're crying, they're extremely emotional, up and down. Bipolar is the third condition that I couldn't remember earlier. So those are things that there are physical indicators that we can look for, and we really have to assess it, and that's done by speaking to the person, and if possible, calling family members if we can do that. But obviously, we don't have always the time to do that. So it's really, it's different on every situation that we approach.
It sounds like police are relatively limited in what they can do. They can try to talk to someone, try to calm them down, hope that they get help in an emergency room. Can they physically take that person to the emergency room?
They can. If they feel that person is an imminent threat to themselves or somebody else, we do have the legal authority to take that person in custody against their will and bring them to the local facility to be examined by a professional. So we do have that law, and thankfully we do have it, and it is used frequently for that situation. a lot of times you have to understand as well as when we approach somebody, they may not have a mental health condition. They may be under the influence of some type of drugs. So really there's a lot going on at that situation. But the best practice is to, if you feel the person's hearing voices, if they're in a situation where they're elevated, is to bring that person to an emergency room to get assessed.
So Rhode Island State Police Lieutenant Colonel Michael Winquist, in your opinion then, should Newport Police have taken Aaron Alexis to an emergency room?
You know, I don't have all the facts in front of me, and I wasn't there to assess the situation. I have full faith in the Newport Police Department. I actually know some of the officers involved, and I know they're very professional officers. So not knowing all the facts, I wouldn't like to comment on that, but I can tell you that if we come across somebody that's hearing voices and to the degree that they're being told to do some type of action, it is recommended that we take that person into custody to an emergency room to get evaluated.
Well, Lieutenant Colonel Michael Winquist of the Rhode Island State Police is Deputy Supervisor for Field Operations. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
From the Willamette Valley to the Patuxent Valley, the debate over the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, rages among politicians and the media. Some congressional Tea Party conservatives are even threatening to shut down the federal government if Obamacare goes forward. Rhode Islanders get their first glimpse at the future tomorrow when our state's new health care exchange, HealthSource RI, goes into business. A smart strategy for our small state would be for everyone in this contentious joust to take a deep breath and watch what happens. The online insurance marketplace that kicks off tomorrow is designed in the short run to expand health care to those who are currently uninsured. Rhode Island's version of Obamacare has been in the works for several years and is largely the offspring of Lieutenant Governor Elizabeth Roberts and its director, the healthcare guru Christine Ferguson. Ferguson's vision is a marketplace focused on the needs of Rhode Island's beleaguered small business community, which has endured a stubborn recession. Among the biggest complaints of leaders of these companies, which employ fewer than 50 workers, is the cost and availability of health insurance. The research shows that the overwhelming majority of workers of large companies have access to employer-based health coverage. This is not the case for small business. Just half of Rhode Island's small businesses offer affordable health coverage to their workers. HealthSource RI aims to change this by setting up a transparent online market that employees, employers, and their insurance brokers can use to easily compare competing plans. At this point, the exchange is financed by federal dollars, so there is no state money involved. This may change down the road, but for now, we must be candid about the zero cost to Rhode Island state taxpayers. The debates have swirled around Obamacare and have sprouted more myths than those about George Washington's youth. It's socialism, the critics assert. Of course it isn't. The marketplaces are run by states, offering private insurance companies, and have far more free market elements than either Medicaid or Medicare, both of which resemble a socialistic single-payer system far more than Obamacare. Tea Party Republicans have railed against this system, and most Democrats have voiced support. What's been lost in the politics and cable television shoutfests are the drawbacks of the current system. Too many Obamacare critics have failed to provide a reasonable alternative to the mess that is our current system, which leaves 11% of Rhode Islanders without health coverage. When these people get sick, which they inevitably will, they get treated at the hospital. Then those costs get shifted to the taxpayer or to those who pay for insurance or get it through their employers. The media is filled with doomsday stories about businesses hiring fewer full-time workers or dropping employer health coverage to avoid this new health care regime. Yet the experience in Massachusetts, which has a state-based version of Obamacare and has since Republican Mitt Romney was governor, tells us that businesses do not stop covering their employees. Facts are stubborn things. What they show is that in the Bay State, employers have actually increased health care coverage for their workers. Small business and the working poor will get federal subsidies and tax credits to help cover the cost of their insurance. Over the long haul, this could be a huge aid to stabilizing the cost of health care. If everyone's insured, it becomes easier for the doctors, clinics, and hospitals to figure out how to set up preventative care networks that will keep people with such chronic diseases as diabetes and asthma out of hospital emergency rooms. The best thing about all this is that if it works, it should lead to a healthier Rhode Island workforce and employees who take fewer sick days. Is anybody really against that? Let's turn down the volume on the debate and ramp up the publicity for getting insurance through our new marketplace. And let's put on hold that ancient Rhode Island attitude of grasping onto nothing so tightly as the status quo. The health of our citizens and the viability of the small business community that is so vital to our state's economy would be helped much by HealthSource RI's success.